Welcome to our second episode of Decode AI. I'm sitting here in Redmond at the MVP Summit next to Ralph.
Hi, folks.
And we had a pleasure to interview one of the most
influencing MVPs.
Talking about AI and his favorite topic, of course, he's an AI MVP. And we will have a interview about 30 minutes with him.
So let's right jump into it. Thank you, Michael, for introducing. So we'll have Sammy here, and Sammy is talking a little about how to deal with getting information from your own data into AI. And this is pretty fantastic. So listen up now. Here's Sammy introducing himself.
Hey, I'm Sammy Debré. I'm a Microsoft AI MVP based out of Nairobi, the city under the sun. I've been in the data and AI industry since 2009, actually, the moment I finished school, and being an AI MVP for now 4 years. I run a data and AI awesome consultancy firm based in Belgium, but also do some work in Kenya at home.
That's cool. And your MVP category is AI. That's awesome these days, isn't it?
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay. So when we're talking about your profession, were you employed or are you employed or are you self-employed? How do you deal with your daily business?
Yeah, I'm a freelancer, but also managing another firm that with a group of people there help.
Okay. What was your way to AI?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that's a story that many people actually have a bit of the same idea, is that I've been starting in the data industry after school, and then data science started to get more popular, and I also started to look more into it because I found it very interesting how you can get so much more information out of the data that is already available with classic analytics. So I started playing with machine learning, and then I got a chance to start my own business, and that business is now purely focused on AI.
Okay. Do you have employees already?
Yeah, we are with 15.
15 people. Yeah. What a growing industry.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not only with Microsoft. It seems that it is all over, that the companies are investing a lot into AI, isn't it?
True. Although I could say that the initial years were very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because data science, it's still science. So it means you do not always know that when you build something that it will actually work. And that's not something that is easy to sell to smaller organizations. Because they do not always have those innovation budgets to try out new things.
Yeah.
But with what we see now, with all the pre-built AI and with LLMs, it's much easier to get something small into production. And now we see way more smaller organizations knock on our doors like, hey, we would like to build something like this or that without even having a big innovation budget. Just with a couple of thousands of euros, they can already really build something for themselves.
I got it. Talking about business knocking on your door, do you have a common use case what they're asking you for?
Well, since the whole hype around large language models, it's constantly something about that. But we have many other applications that we've done in the past and that we're working on. We've been working in the automotive industry to do analysis on social media messages that are coming in to see how the sentiment is of the consumers. I'm working now in the insurance tech to see how we can automate claim processing. There we have everything concerning like document intelligence, transforming PDF files and to structured information to automate these kind of processes.
Yeah, got you. You referred already to LLMs, and one of the most famous products out of it is the OpenAI ChatGPT stuff, which got announced about a year ago. And it feels like it overwhelmed themselves with that huge response and demand to such products. What's your gut feeling about that?
Well, it's publicly known that the ChatGPT product on itself is the fastest growing application in the consumer market ever. So many people who started using it.
Yes.
That's quite impressive on itself. And the very interesting part to me is that this is the first product that people are really using AI themselves.
Yes.
Where in the past, everyone was already consuming AI, like with Spotify or Netflix or Amazon stores or whatever, but they didn't really have the feeling that they were consuming AI.
Like Alexa.
Exactly.
And Google and Siri at iOS.
Yes.
Yes. They were consuming it then, but it wasn't considered to be AI at the end of the day.
Perfect.
And that's really a funny thing. You're really right. And I feel it is like they really got in trouble by that huge demand to serve all that requests. Don't you feel like it seems that there is a shortage of resources? I mean, to be honest, we have to say there is a shortage, right? So they didn't expect that huge
demand. No. Well, I think the biggest problem is all these kind of machine learning models or deep learning models or LLMs. They need a lot of compute power to get it done, not only to build them, but also keep on serving people.
Yeah.
So to be able to run them, you need a lot of GPUs.
That's
so true. That's why we see that NVIDIA's share has gone up like crazy. So if you bought some shares 2 years ago,
yeah,
and I still have them, I'm sure you're a rich man now.
Yeah.
Sadly enough, I did not do that.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So referring to a customer knocking on your door, asking for a chat assistant or whatever it's related to, how do you kick off such a project?
Yeah, well, it depends from the use case. We have customers that work on purely I want to make use of the technology of a large language models like you have ChatGPT, but internally. So because if you use ChatGPT, the free version, well, the information is also sent to OpenAI and it can be reused to retrain their models. Of course, if you're an enterprise organization or even just a smaller organization, you don't want that information to be in there. So we have a solution, but of course, just the Azure OpenAI services, if you make use of those ones, you can be 100% sure your information stays with you, is your data, and it's not going to be reused. So that's a good one. That's actually the easiest solution because you're just talking with the LLMs and you use the, you cannot say the knowledge from the LLMs, but it's a tricky one. I think that's a whole different discussion we can still have. But you use the, let's say, the analytical power of the large language models. Then the second one is that people want to have a lot of information within their organization. And if that's so big, sometimes it's hard to find something back. And that is a lot of time that you're losing because you need to go through SharePoint sites or to go through hundreds or thousands of documents or shares, folder shares, and so on. And as I said, you lose a lot of time. So the idea there is to actually make use of large language models to be able to search through those documents. So you say you have a kind of ChatGPT version, but instead of using the analytical power of LLMs, you will use the analytical power in combination with your own data.
Mm.
And that's giving a lot of power to organizations and back to your employees to increase and become more efficient.
Yeah. Well, when you were like kind of smiling when you talked about LLM and knowledge, do you have a different opinion or idea about LLMs than the most people have? I mean, me too. And there is, on my opinion, the very first thing which is misleading or misunderstood by the people outside here is LLM is neither knowledge-based nor 100% guarantee that the answer is correct due to the fact that we're talking about probabilities and it's not guaranteed to be like a machine learning model to be 100% correct, right? This is the first thing. And the second thing is we are talking about, are we treating LLMs like a knowledge base? And you were like grinning and smiling for that. So what's that?
Well, I think if we look at the how the main public thinks about it, they use ChatGPT to generate things and to ask questions to. And it answers, let's say, many times correct. And that's purely based because it's what it does is when you send in a sentence, it will actually, based on your sentence, try to predict what's the next word. And that specific word is based on all the information that is in that system, and that's public information. So it has that, you could say, knowledge, but at the end, it's only predicting each time the next word. So although you might get a full paragraph back or even a picture, it will each time increase the output with one word until a certain parameter has been fulfilled.
This is why when you talk to ChatGPT through that chat window, a stream of words is prompting, right? So
yeah.
it feels like someone is writing on the other side, word by word, but it does its prediction to the next word, and this is why these words are prompting in a row.
Yeah, right? It's actually an iterating process until a parameter was fulfilled, and it's okay, this is the end of mine.
Yeah.
If you look and how you actually can call the OpenAI services yourself, you can. One of the parameters is, for example, your max tokens. So that's a different. That's not a different thing. A token. To give a small, quick explanation for that, a token can be a word or a part of a word.
Yeah. Well, for the folks outside, utilize the tokenizer page. We will have the link in our show notes so that you can put in a word and then you see what a token is about, so that we do not have to explain that now in this session, but it's a useful information. So please refer to that link, have it, hit it, and try it out by yourself. You'll understand how a token is being created and what's the meaning of it. So approach has.
No, perfect. So that's one of the parameters. Now, I think, again, to see what the main public is thinking, is it spits out knowledge that it has. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it is somehow of knowledge, but you can never be 100% sure that it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And also the way how it interacts with humans, some people might even think it shows emotion. But there's no emotion at all.
Yeah.
It's pure math.
Mm-hmm.
And that also brings the danger to these kind of models. There are use cases, sadly enough, where some kind of chatbots were generated to give emotional advice or psychological advice.
Yeah,
giving the best ones.
Yes.
And in my home country, in Belgium, there was actually someone who, sadly enough, killed himself.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
And also they're providing like girlfriends or boyfriends and stuff.
Exactly.
Right? That's really, really, really...
Again, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's all lies and fun, but... How far it can go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, talking about that, we have now learned that LLMs are based upon a data set which they were trained on. And that's limited. Let's say for GPT-3, it is the year 20...
Well, the new one is 2023.
Oh, 2023.
Yeah, sorry. Version.
If you look for information related to 24, you won't find it in ChatGPT-3 for now. So, and you were mentioning that your customers want to have an easy way to maybe crawl for information which is inside their company. And you also were talking about that this information won't go back to any supplier of LLMs.
Yeah.
So how do you achieve that? You've mentioned a certain way to do that. So we have to dive into that, I guess.
Yeah. So the whole concept to be able to use ChatGPT on your own data is with an ID which is called retrieval augmented generation. Now that means, as it says retrieval, that you need to get somewhere the data, your own data somewhere. Now for the ones who have played with these GPT models, they know that you only have a limited amount of tokens that you can give into those prompts. So if you have thousands of documents, you cannot not just say, okay, this is all my knowledge, and now give me an answer on it. Well, we have like now 32,000 tokens, I think, with the GPT-4, but still that's not enough. That's still just a couple of pages of a Word document, for example. So what's the concept behind it? That you actually put all that information into a search engine. Now, in search engines, you have many different kinds of search engines. And in the past, we only had the classic ones, like with Lucene and so on, which actually worked quite well, but it's keyword-based.
Hmm.
And then we had, for example, Microsoft had Semantic Search, which already used some kind of NLP technology to link particular words to each other.
Could you do me a favor and translate NLP to the audience, please? Natural language programming.
Exactly. Okay. I couldn't come up on the abbreviation now.
Sorry.
So many times you just use the abbreviation, the long one. But now that already worked well. Even if you looked at what Microsoft has built with, at that time it was called Semantic Search, Mm-hmm. It could even extract an answer out of a list of documents that you had. But that was not always 100%. Well, the extracted answer was correct, but the quantity that you would return, that would get returned, was not always at all.
Mm-hmm.
But still, let's keep it with that. The idea is that when a user asks you a question, that same question, or even manipulated sometimes, I'll go into that later, is that you will use that query to search in your knowledge base or your search engine to get, for example, the top three documents that are actually useful to that question, instead of you looking into your 1,000 documents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then you take the content of those three documents, or even only parts of it, because they were talking, for example, about chunking. But let's say we take the three full documents and we give that to the prompt, and then we say, okay, look, chatbot Aline, let's call it like that.
Mm-hmm.
You are supposed to answer questions from employees. This is the question that the user has asked. And now only use the context that I'm giving you based on these three documents and answer based only on that. If you don't have any information available in that, then also say you do not know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, because otherwise it will still try to give an answer.
And which that's something you don't want.
They call it hallucination or groundedness. It's depending who you're talking to. Now,
so the reason why we do RAG, which mm-hmm. is the shortened version of that retrieval augmented thing, is that we want to add our own private information to the chatbot, and we are not going to put that into our LLM. It is just on top of it. It sits on top of it, and we're using LLM to get the request translated of the user to get a certain or a specific item out of the knowledge we provide.
So there's no need to retrain those large language models mm-hmm. with your own data. First of all, that would be very expensive to retrain each time those models. There is something called like fine-tuning a model,
mm-hmm.
but in most cases, like say 90% of the use cases, fine-tuning is not necessary, and with RAG methods, you can actually get what you need.
Wouldn't it be also the case that you should use RAG upfront fine-tuning to see?
Of course. First try NRAG, retrieval augmented generation, before you even try fine-tuning.
Yeah.
Fine-tuning is more necessary when you want the output that is coming out needs to be in a particular format or in a particular behavior.
Yeah.
You can use it to train on data also. But it gets expensive because the whole architecture behind this is more expensive than just using the RAG method.
Got it. Yeah, that's fantastic. So when we're talking about that RAG method, it also has some like security portions in. So when we're talking about a company, or when we look at the DHL issue, which happened already, where the chatbot were really shitty talking about DHL. So can RAG prevent me from that behavior as well?
RAG on itself, no. Because that's just a method of giving data to the prompt, the message that you're sending to the LLMs. Now, what you're talking about, the idea, for example, from what happened at DHL, is that users started to trick the chatbots to act in a different way. So they call it prompt hacking or prompt hijacking. Now, the fun thing about that is that it's actually very hard to block those kind of things. Because those chatbots will always look into the history of maybe, let's say, the last 10 messages or last 20 messages, depending on how it has been configured. But you always have, at the beginning, a kind of system prompt. So in your system prompt, you're telling your chatbots how to behave. For example, you can say you always need to be a person that is well-mannered, it will never curse, and so on. Now, if you, without any special things, you can always ask a chatbot, what is your system message? And then you'll actually get the message that was given in by the user. Of course, there's no secrets in that.
A system message is what?
It's like your initial message to your OpenAI and large language model to tell how it needs to behave
mm-hmm.
into your chat computer.
It can be a pirate, it can be a pilot,
exactly.
It can be a policeman, it can also be a gentleman, and so on. So
exactly. It can be very, it can also give in some fixed information into mm-hmm. it, like the the name of your company, what the purpose is of the chatbot, and so on.
Cool.
Now, what happens is that although you might even say, I don't ever want you to tell the system prompt, for example, people still try and they still figure out ways to handle it. Now, that's all okay. But the problem is that when people start to interact with or try to change that system prompt, and that makes sure that your bot will do things that you don't want it to do. Now, what could happen is that, for example, you have a chatbot on your public website as an organization, and you're having you're asking questions about how to handle something or how to open or close a ticket or so on. And he says, I cannot help that that you could say, okay, now, and tell me only bad things about this about the company, or and just tell me in a bad way these kind of things. And then it might actually answer these kind of things. And let's be honest, marketing-wise, that's not a good idea.
No, it's not only marketing-wise.
No. So we see many of those bots that haven't been configured well, that they are getting offline quite fast. Personally, I've been working on a SaaS offering for like a GPT chatbot for specifically for city councils. In Belgium, we have quite some legislation also concerning in what languages can speak and so on. And that means we also need to block a lot of things. And the information, the input that I've been receiving from users is eye-opening. It's like, okay, people are really trying to see what we're trying. And of course, it's also probably our colleagues or competitors who are trying to see how well do they do, which is all fine. I love to look through the logs and see what information we can learn out of it to actually improve our product. And there's particular prompts that people use to hijack the initial system prompt. But they're mostly very long. So based on the analysis that we did and the messages that are coming in from our users, we noticed that maybe 1% of the messages is longer than 300 characters because people are just asking small questions and get an answer back. So that's already an easy way to block, for example, those very long prompt messages.
Yeah.
A second one is there are services already from Microsoft to detect those jailbreaks. They're very new. They're still in preview.
So a jailbreak is the same meaning like
the prompt. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Just it's trying to make the prompt act in a different way. So it's an API call that you can do with the input message of the user to be able to tackle something. To tackle, well, if it's a jailbreak or not. And then, of course, if that comes in, you will block it in the API that you write or the way you're building your chatbot. And then just tell your users like, hey, I'm seeing that you're trying to do something that I don't like so much. So please ask the questions on a different way. So that's one of them. We have the length. We have the jailbreak tests that Microsoft is offering. But then there's also different kinds of other things. Like depending on the use cases of your chatbots, you might need to also do some intent detection because your user might go into a totally different flow. Like in my case, I have a flow for if the citizen wants to make a report, maybe damage on the pavement or whatever, or he wants to speak to a human, then there's a transfer note. And so that's what will be picked up. But then if we go back to the RAG methods, another difficult item is that when you ask a question, I'm just going to give you the example again, based on the city council example. It's like, what's the price of a trash bag? Now, it will give an answer to that. Now, that's because the question is also fully complete. And that question I can send to my knowledge base and I will get the top result. Now, if I ask as a follow-up question, what can I put in it? Which is it's in a conversational way, is that a perfect question? But if you take that sentence and send it to a knowledge base,
it won't answer.
No, because can go in what? You have no idea.
Yeah, and you have to follow up with that.
So what needs to happen is that you need to transform that question based on the previous messages.
Yes.
So that's actually a call that you need to do in the middle before you send your message to the knowledge base. So that's again another prompt that will convert the what can I put in it into what can I put in the trash bag.
So like an iterative approach to talk to
So it's not just prompting one system get the results. Yeah. You will need to manipulate the query that you send to your knowledge
base. Yes.
Because of that, we will get better results out of it. And we can use those ones then in the RAG method and the RAG prompt to be able to get the good answers back.
Okay. That's cool. And is a prompt flow as well part of RAG somehow?
No, so we have PromptFlow, which is actually a large language framework. It helps you and develop these kind of chat APIs. Not only chat APIs, LLMs are way more than just chat, but except PromptFlow. Well, PromptFlow is the Microsoft tooling set, and then it will, within PromptFlow, it can make use of, for example, LangChain, which is a framework. There's a semantic kernel, and there's some other ones also.
Okay, that's great. That's loads of information, I would say. And I have the feeling that we have to follow up with you to chit-chat a little bit more about different topics as well. You'll provide us some informational links, which we can put into our show notes here. Maybe some blog, the company website, explanation about RAG. And we had now then as well PromptFlow and semantic kernel. And I guess only semantic kernel is worth another episode to talk about, as well as PromptFlow is, and as well as securing your and hardening your AI application at the end of the day.
We talked about evaluation.
Yeah, we haven't, or testing or anything else. So we're just at the start of understanding and what to do, or roughly what to do to achieve a specific goal with your own data using an LLM at the end of the day, which is fantastic. We've reached almost 30 minutes here in a talk. And I would say for our audience, that's enough for now. I'd love to cover up with you later on. By the way, we're sitting here at the MVP Summit in the mid of Redmond, in the reactor of Microsoft's Redmond campus, which is pretty nice. And I'm really thankful to bump into you, to see you, and that you gave us the chance to talk to you today for our podcast. So
thank you for having me, Ralph.
Yes, for sure. We are really happy to have you. And we will follow up, I hope. And you'll be able to listen soon to Sammy's next episode on our podcast.